Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Black won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations, who got the money? That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Bye.
many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. He messed around. He saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had number shelves on it. And in the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't, lose your faith and get on not meant to be way, because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off, because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cat. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land. Okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat, takes a lot less money to cool, it's a lot easier to clean, it's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now I want to repeat, I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at an age, at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.
Hi, my name is Luke, and this video will be like a tour of my house. Before the tour starts, I want to talk a little bit about myself. I'm 13 years old, and when I started this build, I was 12 years old. It's been a little over a year and a half, probably a little less than that since I started this build. It is 10 feet long, 5.5 feet wide. The tallest point of the house is 10 feet tall, the lowest point is 8 feet tall, and it is a total of 89 square feet. The main reason I wanted to build a tiny house was I wanted something to do during the summer. I was getting really bored during the summer, and I got really fascinated with tiny houses, watching YouTube videos and stuff like that. So I decided that if I worked towards it and made enough money from cutting lawns, that I would start to build a tiny house. I learned a lot of it. I learned a lot, like framing, wiring, simple framing techniques, a lot of different skills I learned along the way, carpeting, stuff like that. Also, a lot of woodworking skills, how to use saws, drills, impacts, like multiple tools, and stuff like that. When I was growing up, I used a lot of tools, like a drill, impact, saws. I was really familiar with because my dad had always used them, and I would be exposed to the tools at a young age. So I knew how to use tools quite regularly, and it wasn't very much of a learning curve. Framing the house was a learning curve for me. My dad did a few remodeling projects and stuff like that, so he knew how to do it, but framing, I had no clue how to do it. Now that I'm done building, I think it's a very simple process, but when I started, I didn't know what to do. I started a YouTube channel probably halfway through the build, and I started to document my process. I wish I would have started it the day I started, but that's just not the way it worked out. But I hope to be building another tiny house here in a couple years that I'll be actually living in full-time, and it'll be in a lot bigger size tiny house than this one is. So I kind of made this tiny house as the learning tiny house. So I learned a lot of skills, and by building this tiny house, and I want to take those skills from this house and move them on to a bigger tiny home. So the number one way I made money was by mowing lawns. I also did lots of bartering. So my dad's friend lives up the street from me, and he's an electrician. And I cleaned his garage out so his new car can go in his garage, and he helped pay and helped show me how to wire the house. So he helped me with the whole wiring process, and so it's professionally wired. Another thing I did was I cut one of the adults that I knew from Scouts. I cut his lawn for his apartment building. He helped me put carpet in my loft. So he is a carpenter, and he lays carpet and stuff like that. But he helped me with that part of the build. A lot of people donated through a GoFundMe page, and that was a big help. But most of it was paid by myself, and my parents did not help me pay for it. But my parents did help me with a lot of things, like building. Some big things that happened during the build is I was featured on the front page of the Telegraph Herald. One of my school teachers saw my YouTube channels, and he asked if I wanted to keep it small or I wanted everyone to know about it. And so I think he knew someone that worked in the TH, and he let them know about what I was doing. And they picked it up, and they wrote a whole story about me. A couple days later, they came to my school. They interviewed me. That day they came to my house, took photos, and that morning it was in the paper. So it was a very quick process and stuff like that. Also, I've gotten lots of emails from TV producers and stuff like that. Some want to start teen tiny house shows. And also, I've been invited to speak at tiny house festivals. So lots of things are happening just from me building the tiny house and stuff like that. And it's really cool that the city that I live in, a lot of people know me just from the paper and stuff like that. And they've also came and looked at the house. I hope to be holding a tiny house open house this month, and I hope that goes well because I want to invite everyone that donated and helped me through the build. I'm not full-time living in the house, but I do spend a couple nights every other week sleeping in it. I do spend a lot of time in it. I kind of call it my homework center, you know. It is summer break right now, but when I do get homework, and I have done homework in here, it's really nice. I also have a twin brother, so it helps that I have my own space. So my total cost, I'm finally done with the build, and the total cost of this build is, I'm rounding it up to $1,500. It's more like $1,200, but just to round up in case I forgot anything, I rounded it up to $1,500. Me and my dad really bonded through the process. Me and him spent nights and days building it, and he really helped me. At the time, he was working a full-time job, and he had cows to deal with, so he was really busy, but he made sure to spend time with me and coach me through the process of building a house. And I'm really grateful for a good dad, mom, and a good family. So now I think it's time. I've done a rough talking, and I think it's time for you guys to see the tour. Hope you guys enjoy. We're now on the outside of the house. My house has the front wall and the side wall are cedar shaped. I didn't really do a pattern with them. I just kind of threw them up there. So on the outside, there's a deck. I built this deck. It's fully reclaimed. I spent zero money on it. If you go on this side over here, I have some landscaping right here. These are two peony bushes. And then one of my subscribers thought I should have a flag on the outside of my house, so now I have a flag on the outside of my house. This is a spruce tree, I think, that is not growing, partially my fault. And then we have another flower right here. This is where the electricity comes into my house. There's kind of one that runs all the way back there. This is one of my side windows. I reclaimed this window. And on the back side of the house, I just have some more flowers, and we have the back and this side wall over here is covered with vinyl. This is fully reclaimed vinyl siding from my grandma's house that she had left over. On the front of the house, we have a steel door. This I got reclaimed. One of my uncle's friend had this, and so I painted it, and it's a steel door with the window. I have another window that's reclaimed for free, and I spent $35 on that window right there. I have around a 4-foot, not even a 4-foot, overhang, so I can, you know, unlock the door when it's raining, and I don't have to worry about rain getting on me. I have some flowers over here, and then I have a tomato plant that's growing some tomatoes right now. I built a mini fireplace right here, and then I have a hammock stand on the opposite side. Now that we're done with the outside tour, there's not much on the outside, but there's a lot inside, so let's make our way inside. So right as you walk in to the house, we have a carpet that kind of, you know, makes it feel a little more homey. The floor is actually plywood that I used some putty, leveled it out, and then painted it. That was just because it's not air conditioning in here, and if you ever, you know, because it's not air conditioning, heat and cold, and the floor would just not look good. So I decided to paint the floor, and it also made it cost less. Right as you walk into your right side, you have the kitchen. This is the kitchen countertop. There's a big story on this. I'll have to watch my kitchen countertop fail, but I also have storage right underneath it where I keep some, you know, news articles and stuff like that. Right above it, we have the countertop right here. This is a medicine cabinet, which I store some things like lighter, flashlight, some silverware, you know, seasoning, stuff like that. The tiling right here is actually sticky floor tile that I used, and it looks really nice. Above here, we have some storage where I keep some, you know, paper towels and some mini tripods. I get plumbing. There is no plumbing in the house, so this right here stores water. The bowl comes down like this, and then you can have water to use. We also use biodegradable soaps. So you can actually...
It ain't like stepping on ants, Jake. Takes a man to kill. You man enough to kill, Jake? He'd be right there. Hit me. Hit me. Hit me. You can't do it. Somebody drop this fool for me.
You got us twisted, homie. We gotta put your own work in around here.
It's like that, Bone?
It's like that.
Player to player, pimp to pimp. I'm believe you shoot me, nigga. Don't do it. Don't do it. Now I'm believe he got in there, Jake. Shit. I'm gonna get that gun, and then I'm gonna get that money. And you ain't gonna do a damn thing, because you ain't gonna shoot no cop in the back, are you?
Don't do it.
You know what they give you for that? The gas chamber. You know what the gas chamber smells like? Pine oil. That's where you headed, boy. To pine oil heaven. I'm gonna get that gun, and then I'm gonna get that money. I don't believe you got it in you, Jake. I'm gonna go get it right now.
Oh, shit! Ah, you motherfucker!
The next one will kill you.
Oh, son of a bitch. You shot me in the ass.
Okay, wait. Okay. All right, look. Well, Jake, I need the money. Give me the money, Jake. Give me the money, please, Jake.
Give me that money!
It's not going to happen. Oh, you going to jack me now? You going to take my own money from me, huh?
I told you, that's my evidence. You want to go to jail, you want to go home.
I want to go home, Jake. Come on, give me the money and let me go home.
Yeah? You want to go home?
Yeah, let me go home, Jake. Come on, give me the money and let me go home. Give me the money and let me go home. Let me go home, Jake. That's right, come on, Jake. You don't deserve this.
Okay, you motherfucker. Jake, go ahead and bounce on me. Get up out of here. We got your back.
What?
Like that.
Oh, no, you didn't. Wait a minute. No, you did.
Hey, Jake! Hey! Jake! 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 Come back here! Jake!
You disloyal, fool-ass, bitch-made punk.
Jake! I need my money! Jake!
Oh, you motherfuckers. Okay. All right. I'm putting cases on all you bitches. Huh? You think you can do this shit?
Jake! You think you can do this to me? You motherfuckers will be playing basketball in Pelican Bay when I get finished with you. Shoe program, nigga. 23-hour lockdown. I'm the man up in this piece. You'll never see the light of day. Who the fuck you think you fucking with? I'm the police. I run shit here. You just live here. Yeah, that's right. You better walk away. Go and walk away, because I'm going to burn this motherfucker down. King Kong ain't got shit on me.
That's all right. Shit. I don't fuck. I'm winning anyway. I'm winning. I'm winning any motherfucking way. I can't lose. Shit, you can shoot me, but you can't kill me. Ah. Shit. Oh, what a day. What a motherfucking day.
legislation aimed at transgender student athletes is now headed to the governor. It was added to an education bill as a last-minute amendment last night before passing the House and Senate. The House previously passed a standalone bill. It would have allowed public schools and colleges to request a health exam and a consent form to verify a student's biological sex. A similar bill stalled in the Senate. The amendment that passed removes the exam requirement, but it still requires athletes to prove their biological sex with a birth certificate. News 6's Lewis Bolden has reaction from both sides of the situation, all new at 6.
This bill is discriminatory on its basic level. It violates human rights.
Jeanette Jennings knows firsthand what it's like having a transgender daughter playing sports in Florida. In 2008, at the age of 8, her daughter Jazz was banned from playing soccer on the girls' soccer team. And at 13, initially wasn't allowed to play varsity girls' tennis.
I'm not allowed to play because I'm transgender. I don't think I deserve to be discriminated against.
But a more trans-inclusive policy later allowed her to play sports in school on the girls' team.
By the time she was in high school, she'd already had clearance through the Florida High School Athletic Association, so she was allowed to play sports.
Jennings says the bill that is now headed to the governor, which will ban transgender females from competing in girls and women's sports in the state, is a step backwards.
There's far more important things to do in this country than to pick on trans children who already have a 50% suicide attempt rate.
I voted in favor of the transgender bill.
Representative Ray Placencia represents Orange and parts of Brevard County.
This wasn't something that was an attack on the LGBT community in no way whatsoever. My record proves that.
Yeah, I don't agree with it. No.
Brianna Rockmore says lawmakers did not take into account hormones that trans women take when transitioning, which lower testosterone and increase estrogen.
With those two things, that's changing how your body works. So, for instance, with the hormones, I'm not as strong as I used to be.
I believe that if you're supporting the LGBTQ plus community, you support from the smallest person to the oldest person, and that means no discrimination at all.
The legislative session ends tomorrow, and the governor is expected to sign the bill. In Orlando, getting results, I'm Lewis Bolden, News 6.
Lewis, thank you. The Orlando-based U.S. Tennis Association just shared this response to this bill. Its statement says in part, quote, "Tennis thrives when the sport embraces inclusion. We unequivocally support and welcome all transgender student athletes to participate in our Florida tennis programs. The legislation could put Florida's chance at hosting some collegiate competitions on the line. The NCAA has promised to choose locations that are, quote, welcoming and respectful of all participants. It is not commented since this bill passed last night. Right now, Florida is scheduled to host 17 NCAA championships through 2026.
And now, an exclusive first look at the upcoming documentary, 7 a.m.
Because true economic science is a branch of military science. War and money go hand in hand. Most wars are fights so people can make more money, and war is money. That means what? That the European American is not about to prepare black children to compete with his children for control of the economic sector. It's not going to happen. So if black people want this science, we got to teach it, we got to study it, and we're going to have to make some mistakes in perfecting it because we're still babies in the water of global economic commerce. As African people, we are financially illiterate. So we should not be surprised that we're so economically backward because we were never taught how to be economically forward. Our education in America has not provided or prepared us to be able to compete with Europeans economically. The historically black college was designed to do what? Teach you how to work for white people. Public schools, charter schools, parochial schools, independent schools. What is the purpose of education in America for black children right now? To teach them how to make a living working for white people. But I don't want the kids coming to my school to be going to class thinking that I'm learning this so I can go and get paid by a white person. They're going to be empowered to start their own business. When they leave that school, they're going to go into business. And why do we need our people to be self-sufficient? Because when you're not self-sufficient, you can't speak your mind. One of the biggest reasons why black people have been so cowardly in the post-civil rights movement, not standing up for ourselves, standing up for our children, standing up against police brutality, we're scared to lose our jobs. We have to work. We got kids. I can't talk about the racism on my job. I might lose it. So the reason why we're not speaking our mind is because we don't have economic freedom. As Mr. Garvey said, Marcus Garvey said, that a solid racial program must be built on a solid economic foundation. Show me your economic condition, and I'll show you your political condition. The political economy of the black community rests on the premise that because they do not make their own money, they are enslaved to Europeans. And as a result of that, they will never be able to do what needs to be done to carve out a future for their children, because the hand that pays is also the hand that rules them.
How do I have my power and my commitment if I don't have the sources, the income or a home or the power to help our people?
Well, I would argue that the income and a home is often a barrier to your commitment.
Mm.
What I find today is black people who have that education, who are in a privileged position, that privileged position often becomes a barrier to them reaching back to help other African people. If you look at what's going on in the NFL right now,
yes,
where you have these very aggressive alpha males,
mm-hmm.
our black athletes, particularly our NFL athletes in particular, they're gladiators, they're warriors. They're some of the biggest, meanest men you'll ever see in your life.
Yes, they
but
are.
When it comes to confronting white supremacy, structural inequity, racism, and systemic discrimination, they are some of the most cowardly black men I've ever seen in my life. Ray Lewis, Shaquille O'Neal,
yeah.
Lil Wayne, just to name a few
yes.
of the most
yes.
ridiculous excuses for black men I've seen
mm-hmm.
over the past couple of weeks and what they've had to say out of their mobs on national television.
Yeah.
I mean, for Lil Wayne to sit up there and say he's never dealt with racism. You are from Louisiana. You are a richly melanated black man from the inner city.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, there's no black man in America. I think we would all agree that Barack Obama may have been the most privileged black man ever.
Yes.
Even he has had to deal with racism. I know rich black males, they have had to deal with racism.
Oh,
I know biracial black males, they have had to deal with racism. But you're going to sit up here on national TV and go as far as to lie. That was a lie. Go as far as to lie and say you never dealt with racism because you're too afraid to speak up on behalf of your people who are suffering from police genocide, given the fact that you've made millions of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
off of rehearsing and revamping negative stereotypes of black women and black men. I mean, your songs is about killing black folks, selling
but
dope.
I was gonna say
he's not
one of the people we want to stand on the front
exactly.
line. Now, if he was well versed in understanding and not faded all the time, then we would okay, yes, stand up for us because his money is his power. But he's
right.
not. He's not there.
What he said was unjustifiable, regardless of how you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the pill could have been better swallowed had he not made such or built for himself such a lucrative estate
mm-hmm.
on the backs of black stereotypes.
It's true.
So it's one thing that you benefit yourself off of negative caricatures of black people,
mm-hmm.
and then you turn right around and defend white folks.
And
so you've already hurt us with
your
music, and you're going to turn around and hurt us again with defending white folks. Nobody should ever buy another Lil Wayne album in their lives.
Now, you know, culturally, we are entertainers and we're sports figures, and we have a lot of entertainers and sports figures that have millions of dollars. What is it going to take to have those? Because culturally, that's what we do. We dance, sing, and we play sports, and we make millions of dollars in those areas. What is it going to take to unite some of these football players and basketball players and singers and dancers to come off some of that, to build some of these banks mm-hmm. and invest in some of these banks, to go back to their neighborhoods in which they've grown up in and now they've left? What is it going to take for us to kind of convince some of them who have the millions of dollars to put back into the community?
Well, first of all, we have to recognize that our black celebrities, be they athletes or entertainers, we see them as people, but from a capitalist perspective, they are a corporate product. C is a corporate product. LeBron James is a corporate product. They are merchandise. That means that they are controlled by the corporation. Everything they think, everything they say, everything they do must be rubber stamped by the corporation that created them. They are merchandise. They are not free to exercise their own discretion to use their money how they see fit. We have to understand the black celebrity is in a position to create economic revolution for black people. And because of that, they are being watched more closely by the FBI than Umar Johnson ever could be. I can talk about it, but they have the money to make it a reality. And yes, because of that, they are under a surveillance that's greater than anything COINTELPRO has ever put in our community. So that is to say that they will never be, they will never be the catalyst for the economic change. They will come in after the change has already taken place, which means
we have to do the work.
We have to bake the cake, and the celebrities will put the cherry on top when it's done.
Wow. Well, Dr. Umar, we're going to go to the phone lines right here. We have a caller that's been waiting for a while here, and we're going to go to those. Caller, 214, you're on the Bobby Eaton Show.
Yes. Good evening, and I wanted to address the sports and entertainment aspect of raising funds for the community, and that would be that these corporations bankroll, like the doc said, these athletes, but they already know where the true athletes come from. So you flip that as black people and you send your black athletes to black universities where that you filter that money from the corporations to the black universities. Because they're going to follow, America loves athletes, and they're going to follow the athletes. The money's going to follow the athletes. And you flip it and you turn it to where you have to talk to your community and send your young black athletes to black colleges where they're more respected, they're more comfortable, and they're more inclined to educate themselves.
So how you feel about that, Dr. Umar?
I actually totally agree with him. In fact, I was questioned on another interview, actually several interviews, about the Black Missouri, University of Missouri Black Student Athlete protest that took place a few months ago, not only in Missouri, but at many of the predominantly white institutions around the country. Black students and black student athletes engaged in protests against racism on campus. And people asked my opinion, and in support of what the caller just said, I said that if these students were really serious about fighting against racism, you would not be giving $30,000 of your money a year away to a racist white college. You would divest from the University of Missouri and take your $30,000 a year to Howard or Spelman or Hampton Clark or Morehouse. If you really wanted revolution, you would simply cripple the white college by divesting. What could any of the Division I white colleges do without the black male athlete? Do you realize that many of these Division I white colleges, they make more money off of a football team than they do from
any of their operations,
including tuition? So he's correct. That would be revolution for every Division I black athlete to leave the white college and go to a black one. But there's only one problem with that. Black people lack the cultural commitment to make a major move like that.
In the financial arena,
Chinese
too.
Chinese would do it.
Yeah.
Latinos would do it. Arabs would do it. Indians would do it. European Jews would do it. Black people hate being black too much for you to expect them to do something in the interest of other black people.
Wow. Well, I'm glad you said it that way, because
that is
so true. You know, that's just laying it out the way it really, really supposed to be. You know,
and it comes from years and years of that propaganda and that mindset that we have that needs to be changed. Like the caller says, let's take our children and put them somewhere where they're respected and where they're still going to garner those big monies in the end.
Also,
and education.
Dr. Umar, don't you think that we need more black media, you know, like TV and radio and more communication type of, you know?
Yes, you have to have your own information and propaganda dissemination network and system. Why? Because the brain, I don't care how intelligent you are, the brain will always be the victim of repetition.
anything that the mind is consistently exposed to, no matter how intelligent that mind is, that mind will come to believe it. Look on television. Look at the most popular shows on television. They are very demeaning and disrespectful to black women in particular, black people in general. Our children are being programmed by Scandal and Housewives and Empire and Orange is the New Black and all these disrespectful shows about black folk. This is nothing but informational warfare. And the problem is black people actually think that entertainment is not political. Entertainment is the most political aspect of American society because before you can exterminate a people physically, you have to exterminate their image in the minds of the community. So before you can kill black men on the street, you have to kill the image of black men on television.
Dr. Umar, I'm so glad you said that. I've been doing media.
We've been talking about it.
For about 25 years, man, and you are so correct and on point with that, because I've seen how much power can be used.
I support reparations. We're going to get reparations. Okay. But I got five issues with the reparations movement.
Okay, can we hear?
Issue number one, I haven't seen any accounting with regard to the psychological damage that was done to African people. All I see is a focus on 243 years of unpaid labor. That's important, but that 243 years of unpaid labor is nothing compared to 400 years of psychological terrorism. Where is the accounting for the psychological damage? You understand?
I understand.
Why do successful black men marry outside of their race more than all other men put together marry outside of theirs? Psychological terrorism of white supremacy. Why do most black women feel in order to be beautiful, they got to put somebody else's hair on their head? That's psychological terrorism. Why do successful black people feel they have to live in a white suburb to feel like they've made it? That's psychological terrorism. You see, that is the continual residual side effects of Ma'afa, i.e. post-traumatic slavery disease. You can pay us for 243 years, but that does nothing to undo the mythicide. We need an accounting on the psychological damage that was done to the African, and that psychological damage is worth 100 times more than the unpaid labor. Number two, if we're going to talk about reparations, it cannot stop with 1865 and the 13th Amendment. Are we going to let them off the hook for the last 154 years of the same thing? See, don't stop this at 1865. Bring it all the way up to 2019. And one of the things that must be accounted for and restored and repaired is the fact that white folks have stolen tens of thousands of acres of black land in this country at gunpoint that we are entitled to get back. So where is the conversation about returning the stolen land back to black folks? See, we dealing with gentrification, right? They pushing us out of our neighborhood. But how much of those neighborhoods they pushing us out of were actually owned by black folks 100 years ago? There must be a reclamation of the land. Next, I haven't seen anybody mention the Arabs and the role that they played in the slavery. The Arabs were trading slaves before the white man, and they still trade them to this very day. Are we only dealing with the British? What about the Arabs? Deal with everybody.
Right.
Next, there was one slave. But all of the reparations movements are divided like tribes. There's an English reparations for the slaves of Europe. There's a North American reparations for the slave of America. The Caribbean have their own reparations. Africa got their own reparations. Why do you have all these different reparations movements when there was one slavery that took us from one place. The reparations movement needs to be unified or it will fail. Why? Because the slave master will play us against each other so none of us get nothing. Let me give you an example. If America says you owe us $20 billion, hypothetically, and Jamaica says you owe us $40 billion, white man going to say, well, if I owe black America $20, how can I possibly owe you $40? In other words, if we don't collaborate with the arguments, they'll be able to expose contradictions in all of our arguments, and none of us will get nothing. So there must be a unity of movement. Last thing. I don't want any money from America for reparations, because American money ain't worth anything. It's not backed by gold. It's not backed by diamonds. It's not backed by silver. I don't want no... The worst thing we could do is take a check from America, because America's money is only a promissory note. So what do you mean, Doc? I'm saying that the reparations should take the form of things and assets and privileges and resources and rights that can never expire. Why? Okay. Because the benefit of slavery to America can never expire. So whatever we accept as payment for it should equally never expire. I want control over certain land forever, certain waterways forever, certain resources forever, certain institutions forever. Because America will forever benefit from me, so I should forever benefit from her.
That's fire right there.
Before there can be external reparations, there must be internal restoration. I want y'all to hear this. One other point I'm going to disagree on with the Queen, respectfully. Money will not save us. I know, but hear me. Hear me. Right, but hear me, hear me, hear me, hear me, hear me. But you said the money would help us. No, it won't. Okay. People argue that the money will help us, not you, but people argue that the money will help. I'm here to tell y'all, listen to me now. I don't care how much money they give you in reparations, and I've already made it clear I don't want any money, right? It won't help you. Do you want to know why? Because the problem of the Negro is profoundly psychological. It's not monetary. You blow $2 trillion a year. You blow $2 trillion a year. So is the reparations dollar any different than the ones you already got in your pocket? What are you going to do differently with the reparations check than what you're doing now? Let me tell you. Let me say this. I'm for reparations. I want to be clear. But what I'm for first is for us to not be so thirsty for a check and look within the community and build infrastructure. Because if the black dollar doesn't circulate not even one time before it leaves, how fast do you think your reparations dollars are going to leave? Do you realize we don't have any infrastructure or businesses to track the money? In other words, the Chinese can't wait till you get reparations. Mercedes-Benz can't wait till you get reparations. I heard they're going to open up a reparations hair store and have a reparations weave sale. I heard Foot Locker going to have an Air Jordan reparations special for all you Negroes. Because as soon as you get your check, you're going to take it straight to white folks and Chinese. All I'm saying is we're entitled to it. We will get it. But I would hope that we would care enough about our great-grandkids, great-grandkids, to build the infrastructure that can trap the money inside before we get it. Otherwise, we're going to blow it, and we only got one chance.
And agencies to keep it going. Fire, water and power, education, health. There's a department of airports, a harbor department, and libraries. There's also a department for law and order. This is Parker Center. I work here. I carry a badge. It was Monday, June 29th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide. The boss is Captain Brown. My partner's Bill Gannon. My name's Friday. Mrs. Lily Burnham, a real estate broker, has been reported missing. The preliminary investigation indicated a strong possibility of foul play. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. Bill and I drove over to the offices of the Burnham Realty Company, 9:05 a.m. Police officers, this is Bill Gannon. My name's Friday.
I'll tell Mr. Richmond you're here.
Thank you.
I'll just be a moment.
Oh, take a look at this, Joe. Beautiful home, isn't it?
Yeah.
You can tell quality construction. 3+10, 2 baths, built-ins. What do you figure the asking is?
The what?
The asking price. How much for this one?
Well, I wouldn't have any idea.
Got to be 42.5. Probably take 39.7 today's market.
Is that right?
You bet. I know the market pretty good.
You do, huh?
Every Sunday we go for a drive. Eileen will watch for open houses, you know, furnished models. We stop and go through them, spend the whole afternoon. We've seen some great buys, Joe.
Well, I didn't know you were interested in a new house.
What makes you say that?
Well, I mean, you're out looking at all those great buys.
Well, you've been out to my place.
That's right.
What's wrong with the house I've got?
Sergeant Friday, this is Mr. Richmond, one of our salesmen.
Sergeant.
My partner, Officer Bill Gannon.
Well, you gentlemen aren't here to buy a house, so I better let you do the talking.
Wonder if we could have your name, miss.
That's right, Miss Walters. Ida Walters.
And you filed a missing report, did you?
Well, yes, sir. I'm Mrs. Burnham's secretary.
Ida phoned him in, Sergeant, on my say-so.
How long has she been missing?
From our happy little circle since Friday afternoon. Went out to show some property about 2 o'clock.
2:15, I saw her drive away.
Did you? Well, then, Ida must have been the last one to see her.
She didn't even phone in again.
Was that unusual?
Yes, sir.
The weekend, gentlemen, that's when we move houses. A man and wife, generally, they can't get out together during the week, so we spend Saturdays and Sundays sitting in a furnished model, wheeling and dealing. You know.
Yes, sir.
Now, you take Miss Lily. She's a businesswoman. Nothing would keep her from a weekend of wheeling and dealing.
Something did.
Yeah, that's why we reported it.
Maybe she's sick.
I called her apartment house. Somebody looked in.
Yes, ma'am.
They don't think she's been there all weekend.
She might have gone out of town. Has that ever happened before?
Not on a weekend.
Does she have relatives?
There's a sister, I think, in Philadelphia. Nobody out here.
Well, there must have been a husband at one time. What about him?
He's never mentioned.
All right. Does she have a boyfriend?
There's Terry Williams, but it looks like he doesn't know anything either.
Mr. Williams has been calling us 2 or 3 times on Friday and again this morning.
I see. Well, maybe there's somebody else.
Wouldn't matter, Sergeant.
Well, how's that?
She had an appointment this morning to close the deal. No man would ever stand between Lily and the commission, or a woman either.
Maybe that's the secret of her success.
You have to understand, gentlemen, Ida is the president of the Miss Lily fan club. I work here just for money. It gives us different perspectives.
Do you need me for anything else?
We'll need a description of Mrs. Burnham.
Well, she's attractive, I guess, if you like them cold and ruthless. Age, what would you say, Ida?
About 36.
Yeah, 36 going on 42. But she's kept her figure and knows how to dress.
You remember what she was wearing Friday?
Your department, Ida.
It was her paisley linen dress. Over it, she wore a matching linen coat.
What color?
The dress was orange and yellow, and the coat was yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And bone leather shoes with a matching purse. It's very smart.
Yes, ma'am. Anything else?
No, except we're all terribly worried. It's just not like Mrs. Burnham. She must have had an accident or something.
Something has kept her away, but knowing our Lily...
Yeah.
I doubt it was an accident.
Before leaving the realty office, we learned that Terry Williams, the missing woman's boyfriend, was the day bartender at a bar on West Adams. We also obtained the make, model, and license number of Mrs. Burnham's car. 10:50 a.m., we went back to the office, and after checking R&I, we put out a teletype describing the vehicle with a request that, if observed, to notify Homicide Division. 11:05 a.m., we drove over to West Adams to interview Terry Williams, Mrs. Burnham's boyfriend.
Good morning.
Terry Williams.
That's right.
Police officers.
Mm-hmm. It's about Lily Burnham, isn't it?
That's right.
Only thing it could be. The secretary said they were going to report it if she didn't show up soon. Guess she hasn't, huh?
When did you see her last?
Thursday night. We had dinner, a couple of drinks. Broke it up early.
See her over the weekend?
No, sir.
You didn't make a date with her?
Nothing definite. Said I'd call. Maybe we'd get together.
Did you call?
A few times. Got no answer.
How long have you known Mrs. Burnham?
Guess it must be close to a year now.
She got any other boyfriends that you know of?
Don't see how she could. We were together most of the time.
But not over the weekend?
That's right. Because she wasn't in when I called. I explained all that.
Would you happen to have a photograph of her?
No, sir.
Use the phone.
Do you know if Mrs. Burnham carried a lot of cash?
She was never short, but not enough to go very far. If that's what you're thinking.
That's not what I'm thinking.
Robbery? How much do you need to get mugged these days?
Not very much.
Excuse me. Got a customer down here.
Nothing on Williams. Local boy. Clean all the way through high school.
Yeah.
Mrs. Burnham's car turned up. They want it moved before tonight. They need the space.
Who's that?
Car's in a restaurant parking lot.
A.M. According to the parking lot attendant, the car had been discovered on the lot Saturday morning. It was first assumed the owner, deciding he was incapable of driving, had gone home in a cab and would return for it the next day. When it was still there 48 hours later, it was reported abandoned.
Book of real estate listings.
Keys are in the ignition.
Gas receipt, Mrs. Lily Burnham, 17 gallons.
Tank's almost full. Where'd she buy the gas?
Station out near Hanson Dam.
12 noon. Before leaving the lot, we arranged to have Mrs. Burnham's car gone over by SID. An examination of the loose leaf book revealed 8 listings in the Hanson Dam area. 12:20 p.m., we interviewed the attendant at Jackson & Martin's Super Service. After hearing a description of Mrs. Burnham in her car, he thought he remembered her from last Friday. He was almost certain there had been a man in the car with her, but he was unable to give us any description of him. We got a copy of the recent listings from the Burnham Realty Company. We also picked up a set of keys for the houses. 12:35 p.m., we started checking the various listings. The occupants of the houses told us Mrs. Burnham had not been there at any time in the past month. 12:48 p.m., the third house we checked was vacant and still for sale.
What was it, number 1223?
That's right.
Yeah, here we are. Lipstick on them. Could have been here a long time.
Yeah, I'll check the rest of the place.
Bill. Orange and yellow linen dress, bone shoes, matching handbag.
Yep.
Mrs. Lily Burnham.
p.m. In answer to our request, a field supervisor and 2 radio units arrived at the scene. One unit was stationed at the end of the street to keep out curious onlookers. The other was sent to cruise the area in the hopes of locating witnesses. Men from SID were also dispatched. The room was dusted for fingerprints. Photographs, both in black and white and color, were taken of the victim.
You want to take a look at this now? Outside was wiped clean. $50 in bills.
Inside's pretty neat, isn't it?
Yeah, it doesn't look like anybody prowled it. Usual stuff in it. Compact lipstick, nail file, comb.
Yeah. Better take these beads along. They're broken.
I was just thinking.
Yeah?
This purse, the stuff in it. Not like my wife's.
What do you mean?
You know what's missing? Credit cards.
Well, we know she had a gas card.
Not anymore, she doesn't.
p.m. The radio unit, which had been cruising the area, had located a possible witness. Frank Stobie, a local handyman, told us that while riding past the house on his bicycle at roughly 2:30 p.m. the previous Friday, he had seen a man and a woman approaching the front entrance. He described the victim's clothing with reasonable accuracy, but he could not recall any details about the man. 5:20 p.m. Bill and I decided to re-interview the victim's boyfriend, Terry Williams. At the Red Quill Bar, we were told that he had already left for the day. We got his home address.
Okay, what is it? What do you want this time?
We want to talk to you again.
Did you find Lily?
We'd like you to come downtown with us, Williams.
So she's dead.
What makes you say that?
It's true, isn't it?
You got a coat?
Are you guys arresting me?
No, we just want to get some more information.
Okay. Let me wash my face.
All right.
Joe? Take a look.
If I can just get a clean shirt on of here.
You look fine.
Then you're not taking me in.
Now listen carefully. You have the right to remain silent. Any statements you make can and will be used against you in a court of law. Do you understand that?
Then you are arresting me.
You have the right to the presence of an attorney. If you cannot afford one, one will be appointed without charge before any questioning.
Do you understand that?
Yeah, I understand. I just want to know why.
Well, that makes us even.
Hmm?
We just want to know why you've got those four beads.
Oh, I can explain those.
Suppose you do that.
Thursday night. I told you about it. It was my birthday. Lily took me to dinner. Afterwards, we came over here for a little while.
Go on.
She broke her beads. Or maybe I did. One way or the other, the string got busted. I fixed it for her and thought all the beads were on it. But when I sacked out for the night, those four turned up.
Where did they turn up?
On the couch. Except one I found in the cuff of my slacks. Now, that's the truth.
Maybe. But you didn't tell us all that this morning.
I didn't think it was important then.
Why do you think it is now?
p.m. Terry Williams was booked for murder. Under interrogation, he made several conflicting statements. He admitted that last Thursday was not his birthday and that Lily Burnham had been in the habit of picking up all their tabs. He also admitted they had quarreled that night, but he continued to deny having seen her after she left his apartment around midnight. He could not satisfactorily account for his whereabouts at the approximate time of the murder. 8:05 p.m., the suspect agreed to undergo a polygraph examination. It was conducted by Lieutenant W.L. Klingon. 11:30 p.m., we were given the results of the examination.
First, let me say there were strong patterns indicating deception. For instance, a good reading on the money in the victim's billfold.
He knew how much?
On the nose. It's possible she always carried exactly $50. Some people limit themselves to a certain amount.
Yeah.
Also, a good response on the clothes she was wearing, the string of beads getting broken in a quarrel, and the general location of the crime.
What location?
Handsome Dam area. I'll return to that in a minute. I got a positive reading on the victim's death by strangulation. Now, let me ask you a question, Joe, Bill. Where was she killed?
What do you mean, Lieutenant?
Could she have been murdered somewhere else and her body moved into the house?
No, we didn't find any evidence to suggest that. None at all.
Specifically in the victim's car, parked somewhere in an alley.
You got that reaction from Williams?
Very strongly, and it was dark, rather late at night.
We've got a good witness placing the victim at the house about 2:30 Friday afternoon.
We think she was strangled shortly after. Coroner might confirm the time, Joe.
Yeah, we'll know after the post tomorrow.
All right, let's get back to this reaction on Hanson Dam. Could he have known she was going out there?
Well, the victim might have mentioned it the night before.
Well, I have to tell you, I got no indication at all that he knows the location of the house, or that he took her car, or that he knew where the car was found abandoned.
He just doesn't know the right things, does he?
And yet he reacted to her being dead by strangulation.
That's true, but a woman being strangled in a car parked in an alley is a fairly common scene in mystery novels or on TV. Or he could have been reacting to the way he would have done it.
You mean he might have just played back to you something he'd read?
Or saw in a movie, say, in the last 24 hours. And didn't they quarrel Thursday night in his apartment?
Yeah, according to him.
Well, she got loud and disturbed the other tenants. Well, Williams may have wished he could quiet her down.
I see. Well, what's your best opinion, Lee?
Looks to me like you've got some work to do.
Yeah, how's that?
I don't think he's a good suspect.
Tuesday, June 30th, we attended the postmortem on Lily Burnham. The coroner confirmed that death was due to manual strangulation. He fixed the time of death somewhere between 2 p.m. and 4 p.m. the previous Friday. There was no evidence of sexual assault. On the basis of this information, Terry Williams was cleared and released. 11:30 a.m., Bill and I went back to the office. Bill contacted the real estate secretary, Ida Walters, and asked if she would check Lily Burnham's charge accounts. Miss Walters agreed and said she'd let us know. Friday, July 3rd, in response to a message from Ida Walters, we drove over to the Burnham Realty Company, 2:20 p.m.
I'm sorry I took so long.
That's all right, Miss Walters.
I knew Mrs. Burnham had many charge accounts, but nobody can find any cards or charger plates or anything, unless you found them with her.
No, ma'am, we don't have them.
Well, the only thing I could do was go through the files and look for old receipts and then verify that these accounts were still active.
Yeah.
It was the least I could do for... Anyway, it took time.
What did you find?
Two service station cards, diners club, carte blanche, an air travel card, just about all the major department stores, and Bank AmeriCard. I made this list.
Thank you.
Sergeant, is it true what the papers say that Mrs. Burnham was... It happened last Friday afternoon?
Yes, ma'am. It's been verified.
Then I'm right.
How do you mean?
This statement just came in today from Barton's Wilshire.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, it shows that Mrs. Burnham bought a diamond wristwatch for over $400. At first, I thought the store had made a mistake.
But you called the store, did you?
Yes, sir. They said there was no mistake. They were very positive. I knew then that there was something wrong. I mean, it just isn't possible. Mrs. Burnham couldn't put a charge on her account the day after she was... Excuse me.
All right, whoever it was stole her credit cards. Figured that way he'd buy a lot of stuff that he could sell off later. He'd need a woman to use those cards.
That's right.
Made an appointment with Mrs. Burnham to look at a house. Got her alone.
Yeah.
Then he killed her.
p.m. A description of the suspect's M.O. was circulated to all police departments. A different version of this bulletin was sent to a real estate trade journal for publication. Tuesday, July 7th, a response to our bulletin came in from Phoenix, Arizona.
Man identified as Carl Keegan, alias William Simpson, victimized 9 women in Phoenix. Same M.O., stole credit cards.
Yeah, what about the description?
Good one. This Keegan's wanted on a fugitive warrant.
Yeah.
He jumped bail down there.
1 week passed, Tuesday, July 14th. We got a call from Sergeant Jack Williams, Robbery Division. He said he thought he might have something for us. Bill and I went down to the robbery squad room to see him.
Friday, Gannon.
Jack, how's it going?
Can't complain. Got a bank series going that's keeping us on the run.
Is that right?
A couple of on-ramp specialists. They're really hitting pretty good.
You said you might have something for us.
Yeah, on that realty thing you guys are working.
What do you got?
Just got back in from talking to this woman. Lady realtor down near Inglewood. Name's Roy, Ardith Roy.
Yeah, what about her?
Says about 4 days ago, she was out showing a house to a prospective buyer. Said the guy appeared interested in the house and told her he'd check back with her about making a deal in a few days.
Yeah.
Roy woman said she wrote it off as a no sale. The guy left her at the empty house, she locked up and started back for her office. On the way back, she stopped for a tank of gas. When she went to give the attendant her credit card, she noticed it was gone. Not only her gas card, but all of her cards.
Now, the man she was showing the house to, did he give a name?
Yeah, Simpson. William Simpson.
She gave you a description?
Yeah. It's all down here. There's more.
Go ahead.
Well, she figured until today, maybe she just lost the cards or misplaced them. She finished checking her morning mail. That's why she called in.
Yeah.
She got a bill from Mallard, you know, the sporting goods store?
Yeah.
Well, the bill was for $780. Most she ever bought there was a catcher's mitt for her son's birthday.
Did you check the store?
Yeah. Clerk remembers a rather nice-looking girl who charged this stuff. He asked for identification. The girl showed him all the other credit cards, so naturally, he didn't question the purchase. Big store. Doubtful if anybody would know the Roy woman on site.
That it?
Well, that's it. Whoever you're looking for, sorry I can't serve him up on a plate, but it ties, doesn't it?
Sure sounds like it, Jack. Now, this realtor, she say anything about the man's behavior?
She said he appeared courteous, looked the house over carefully, appeared straight enough to her.
How'd this Simpson get to her purse, she say?
Told her she left it on the kitchen sink. The two of them wandered through the house. When they got to one of the back bedrooms, the guy said he'd like to take one more look at the kitchen. She stayed in the bedroom. He went to the kitchen by himself.
Thanks, Jack.
Got anything going for you?
We put a notice in the real estate trade journal. About all we can do is wait and hope it brings rain.
And in the meantime, there are a lot of empty houses to show.
And a lot of credit cards to steal.
Wednesday, July 22nd, 10:45 a.m. We got our first break.
Woman realtor out of McCoyman just phoned in. Name's Esther Jenkins. Saw her notice in the trade journal. Says she's got a date to show a house in 30 minutes.
Yeah.
Description fits Keegan.
11:15 a.m. We arrived at the address given us by the realtor who had telephoned in. Mrs. Esther Jenkins.
I think you'll really enjoy it. It seems to have everything you're looking for.
Yes, I believe this is just what I want.
Hello. Would you gentlemen like to see the house?
Police officers.
Stand still.
You're Esther Jenkins?
That's right.
Just a moment. I don't think you have a right to do this.
We have a right to look at your identification.
And I'm entitled to know why.
You've been the route. There's a fugitive want on you. You jumped bail in Arizona. Let's have your name.
William Simpson.
Miss Jenkins, are you carrying any credit cards?
Yes, I am.
Would you mind showing them to us?
No, not at all. I always carry them with me. That's strange. I had them just a few minutes ago.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm positive. I always carry them with me.
I hope you're not accusing me of taking them.
Well, now, maybe your name's Esther Jenkins. That's what it says on these credit cards.
You can't do a thing until I talk to my attorney.
Ms. Jenkins?
Yes? Those are mine, all right.
All right, put your hands behind your back.
Just a minute. Who do you think you're pushing around?
We're not pushing you around, but since you don't seem to know, I'll tell you what your name is. It's Carl Keegan. You killed a realtor by the name of Lily Burnham, just like you would have this woman if she'd found out you stole these cards.
You can't prove any of that.
Well, we're going to try.
You made a mistake, and I'm not going to pay for it.
You're going to use a credit card?
Just seen is true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On September 20th, trial was held in Department 185, Superior Court of the State of California for the County of Los Angeles. In a moment, the results of that trial. The suspect was found guilty of murder in the first degree. Murder in the first degree is punishable by death or confinement in the state prison for life, at the discretion of the court or jury trying the same. Subsequent investigation led to the identification and arrest of Carl Keegan's female accomplice, who was tried and found guilty on 5 counts of forgery. Forgery is punishable by imprisonment in the state prison for not less than 1 year, nor more than 14 years, or by imprisonment in the county jail for not more than 1 year.
Legislation aimed at transgender student athletes is now headed to the governor. It was added to an education bill as a last-minute amendment last night before passing the House and Senate. The House previously passed a standalone bill. It would have allowed public schools and colleges to request a health exam and a consent form to verify a student's biological sex. A similar bill stalled in the Senate. The amendment that passed removes the exam requirement, but it still requires athletes to prove their biological sex with a birth certificate. News 6's Lewis Bolden has reaction from both sides of the situation, all new at 6.
This bill is discriminatory on its basic level. It violates human rights.
Jeanette Jennings knows firsthand what it's like having a transgender daughter playing sports in Florida. In 2008, at the age of 8, her daughter Jazz was banned from playing soccer on the girls' soccer team. And at 13, initially wasn't allowed to play varsity girls' tennis.
I'm not allowed to play because I'm transgender. I don't think I deserve to be discriminated against.
But a more trans-inclusive policy later allowed her to play sports in school on the girls' team.
By the time she was in high school, she'd already had clearance through the Florida High School Athletic Association, so she was allowed to play sports.
Jennings says the bill that is now headed to the governor, which will ban transgender females from competing in girls and women's sports in the state, is a step backwards.
There's far more important things to do in this country than to pick on trans children who already have a 50% suicide attempt rate.
I voted in favor of the transgender bill.
Representative Ray Placencia represents Orange and parts of Brevard County.
This wasn't something that was an attack on the LGBT community in no way whatsoever. My record proves that.
Yeah, I don't agree with it. No.
Brianna Rockmore says lawmakers did not take into account hormones that trans women take when transitioning, which lower testosterone and increase estrogen.
With those two things, that's changing how your body works. So, for instance, with the hormones, I'm not as strong as I used to be.
I believe that if you're supporting the LGBTQ plus community, you support from the smallest person to the oldest person, and that means no discrimination at all.
The legislative session ends tomorrow, and the governor is expected to sign the bill. In Orlando, getting results, I'm Lewis Bolden, News 6.
Lewis, thank you. The Orlando-based U.S. Tennis Association just shared this response to this bill. Its statement says in part, quote, Tennis thrives when the sport embraces inclusion. We unequivocally support and welcome all transgender student athletes to participate in our Florida tennis programs. The legislation could put Florida's chance at hosting some collegiate competitions on the line. The NCAA has promised to choose locations that are, quote, welcoming and respectful of all participants. It has not commented since this bill passed last night. Right now, Florida is scheduled to host 17 NCAA championships through 2026.
Okay, on this last audio I just played. And it starts off with the comments that came that I saw in the YouTube thread on this video, audio for you guys. It's interesting that you don't, I mean, because you have people that have transitioned from both sexes. Or you got trans men, you got trans women. Now, it's interesting that you don't see, I mean, there might be some cases I don't know about, but generally speaking, you don't see, and I don't have anything against trans people at all, okay? It's your body, it's your life, you do what you want to do. But it's interesting that you don't, when we're talking about athletics here, just athletics, it's interesting that you don't see, I get confused on this topic a lot. You don't see trans men, which is basically females, biological females, that transition to what we call trans males or trans males. And there's plenty of them, but we don't see them wanting to participate in the men's team. You know, the men's JV team, the men's varsity team, the NBA, the NFL, that type of stuff. There might be some cases. I haven't heard of them. There might be some cases, but I just haven't heard of them. There are. I definitely haven't had it. I mean, I don't know of any trans male, which is, once again, at the root, biologically they're female, because you can't change the DNA, that have transitioned and then dominate a particular male sport. You know, nothing in the Olympics, nothing in wrestling, nothing in professional basketball, football, on down the line. Okay. However, starting out with the former Dr. Renee Richards, biologically a male, I forgot their trans name, but he went from male, went to court, won in a court case, and then dominated women's tennis in his little niche. Her little niche, as trans people in this case like to be referred to. All right. Now, what's interesting about some of these lawsuits and all this other stuff, I don't see it as discrimination. You have biological boys, males, we're talking about on the junior high school level, that want to, if you want to transition and it's, you know, with your family, whatever y'all got going on within the family and yourself, that's your business. But you transition and then you want to play on the girls' team. But once again, you cannot change DNA. Hormones can only do so much. The mere fact that you have to take hormones, in my opinion, is a red flag when it comes to competitive sports. Because if a male in the Olympics, both male and female, and we're talking about biologically born male and female, in the Olympics, or not even just the Olympics, but basically in competitive sports, if a male or female, natural born male or female, takes steroids, and any competition that you and your team participated in and won, that can be stripped away from you. Lance Armstrong found out he took steroids, stripped of his winning, you know, his winning awards or whatever you might call them. Okay. There's one woman, I forgot her name, a black woman. She was an Olympic athlete, ran on the track team, and, you know, like the relay teams, found out she took steroids. They stripped the team. The team now, they just didn't penalize her. They stripped the whole team of the record, that the world record that they set, and you know, the ran race, they had to give back their gold medals and all that type stuff for taking steroids. Okay. Because the whole thing with, and then I know the late Lyle Alzado, professional football player, now he lost his life from steroid abuse. So typically, once again, in the Olympics and professional athletes, I know with the NBA, NFL, steroid use is prohibited. I don't know how it is in wrestling. It could be with wrestling, too, professional wrestling. I don't know how it is on college sports, but it probably, I mean, you have to take a urine test. So now if all that's banned with just, you know, naturally biologically born male and female, then the trans people, once again, I have nothing against you. If you want to be trans, that's your life, your lifestyle, so be it. But when it comes to competitive sports, okay, by you taking those shots, all right, particularly when we're talking about people that are middle school age, you know, we're talking about 12, 13, 14, 15, teenagers. And you got a biological male that is transitioning or has transitioned, and you, because you can't do it. I mean, I'm not going to get into that discussion, but you're using drugs. The male or female that are naturally born, if they use any type of drugs, it's a disadvantage. It's another disadvantage. So anyway, that bill, I think, is here in Florida, so it'll be interesting to see how that turns out. But in any event, that's like I said, once again, you don't see trans females, which these are typically trans females, are born male. You check out their DNA, and that's why I like the DNA system. You can fully transition to whatever so-called sex you want, but, and let's say you die, and 1,000 years from now, they dig up that grave, and they check your DNA, they can tell you were born a particular sex. You cannot change the DNA with that. Anyway, so now here's what I think is a best solution. All right, you got male sports for women. You got sports for men. I think if you want to compete, we're talking about the trans community, why not have your own trans competitive sports league? I think that's the best solution. men's track, women's track, trans track. Men's soccer, women's soccer, trans soccer. I think that's the best solution. And maybe one day it might come to that. All right, anyway, let's take a call here. Man, this week went by fast. Friday. 314, your mic is open.
Brother, what's going on, man?
Oh, fast, man, this week, man, this year is moving by fast.
You know, you got some of your calls are trans, you know that?
I've only suspected one call.
All right, well, we won't
They
talk
only
about
called
him.
In once.
We won't talk about him. I mean, about them. But, you know, this thing with Umar Johnson, he really be doing some real long stretching in some of the things that he says. And gathers a crowd that's transfixed and take on these assumptions. And they talk about them as if it's being preached by John the Baptist.
Yeah, he's got a big following.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And where is his school?
From one video I saw early this morning, I think it's in Delaware, he's acquired two buildings. They're right across the street from each other. And what he's looking for now is he's looking for HVAC people or electrician people or an electrician people in some other trade to volunteer to do the repairs. He says he's got the money for the equipment, for the materials, but he's looking for that. But if he can't get the volunteers to do, you know, the trade work, then he needs to raise about another $300,000. That's the latest I've heard, and I heard that this morning.
Well, yeah, that ought to be interesting.
Well,
we should rest assured. We should rest assured that the Alphabet agencies are taking a look at this too.
Probably so. He hasn't made a. So far, well, I'm sure he's under investigation. But, I mean, so far he's got the two buildings. So the thing is, with those, for the size of the buildings that he's talking about, maintenance, man, that might eat him alive. How long will a school ever be financially sustainable.
Well, is he going to charge, is in the plans to charge tuition?
You know, that's interesting that you said that because I'm figuring, you know, has he opened up enrollment yet? I haven't heard anything about that, but I haven't followed him in a long time. I saw that.
Well, let me ask you another question.
This morning.
Let me ask you another question, L.A. These buildings, what were they previous used for?
Good question. I believe they were formerly a charter school.
Oh, formerly a school.
Back in 2000, I think you said 2010. But I do not know the reason why that charter school, those two buildings, why that charter school closed down. I don't know why.
So you say they was formerly a charter school.
They were formerly a charter school.
I wonder, what were they before they became a charter school? Were they schools?
That's a good question. I don't know, the infrastructure was ideal.
If you need these volunteers, it sounds like you're trying to put back in place or bring up to specs some food preparation area. So maybe it was a school.
Maybe.
Oh, I know what I need.
Okay,
I know what I need to ask. I need to ask this. If they were former schools, L.A. Davis, why in the hell did they close?
I don't know, but my guess, okay, man, maintenance. If you don't, if you
yeah, but it was probably the public school, wasn't it? It was public school.
No,
money
there,
is no
there aren't many charter schools. I don't know now. You know more a lot more about this than I do. Aren't many charter schools were formerly private schools that started to accept vouchers? Is that how that went?
Yeah, but if they was charter schools are public school. Charter school
okay,
is not a private school. Charter
right,
schools
I,
are
public
schools. They just allowed to operate and be managed different. They don't have the school board don't manage them. They have their own particular board. So my question is, if they were former public schools, and you know I'm not too bright, Ellie. My mind is fuzzy. What in the heck happened to all the kids?
That's a good question. Well, hold on. We got a person here that might know. I don't know. 773, your mic is open.
Greetings, brother. L.A. and Kiyanka. I am sorry. I did
hear
that. They comment. What happened to the children? Yeah. Unfortunately, a lot of the children dropped out in other public alternative schools. But, yeah, a lot of those children were left by the wayside. Yeah, Bogan High School put over 400 children out onto the streets. Yeah, doing
it was
that.
A public school?
Bogan High School, yeah, 79th and Pulaski, right off Pulaski.
That was a public school as a Pianca?
Yep.
They
put a very inexperienced, yeah, it's my alma mater. Very inexperienced principal in there. She had never been principal of a school, which, you know, they do favors in some of these institutions. So I guess they told her, we're going to give you a school. Well, Julian never let her handle any money over there. She was coming from Julian as an AP. But she had never. And then her mom was somebody supposed to be somebody special. But she certainly, you know, would have parents, you know, like myself, you know, arrested, and I was standing up for the children the day I got arrested. They basically, it was about their money once again, you know, and they misappropriate funds, and they don't want parents to speak up on behalf of the children. So, yeah, they would put 400 children, over 400. I did stop a few, so, you know, they were pissed off with me. Keep in mind, you're saying that you want the students enrolled for the funding. However, when it came down to it, they put those children out, and so what she was doing was she was just focused on the incoming freshmen. So she did an incoming freshman orientation and some kind of breakfast and all kinds of lunches and stuff. But, yeah, a lot of times in these schools, they think some of the money is party money for the staff and for, you know.
What happened to the school board?
Well, I was on the school board, but you see what happened with me. Everybody else was kissing behind.
In God what area was
this? Brother who was the chairperson, but I was a sore thumb sticking out. I was like a thorn in her side because I'm like, well, let's look at this budget. She didn't know how to read the budget. I had been a consultant.
Was that
that's a
Chicago,
public school,
they
though.
Have a teachers union, don't they?
Oh, the teachers, man, they were afraid to get fired. You know, you got to be kidding me. One of the APs who was there before she was appointed. See, remember, there was a lot of corruption around that time. It was in 2012, 2013. And subsequently, after my arrest, although I did go before the board, and mind you, they falsely accused me of criminal trespass, and I was on the school board. You feel me? So I went before the citywide school board, and Dr. Barbara Bird Bennett was subsequently arrested and she was accused, not falsely, but she was accused and indicted for misappropriating funds. She was spending money that she should not have been touching. So a lot of these schools were doing it, too.
Who prosecuted her?
Not the focus. Yeah, unfortunately.
Who prosecuted her? The county prosecutor?
Pardon me?
Who prosecuted her?
The state's attorney. I don't know. State's attorney's office?
So the state, so being that the funds come from the state predominantly, so the state attorney prosecuted her. I don't understand how the board let.
I really don't know. I'm saying I suppose probably. Yeah, I don't.
I don't understand how the board let that go that far.
Because she was the president, so she, you know, what I've noticed in some of these groups and cliques with these adults, you know how how, you know, back in the day, somebody say, you owe me, I did you this favor. So they do that a lot, unfortunately. You know, it's a favor for a favor. And she was letting a lot of those principals, well, a lot of the principals and leaders, teachers and all, a few people came to me and said, hey, you know, we're going to bring her down, Dr. Barbara Bird Bennett. And I'm like, well, nobody stood with me, and I wasn't a tit for tat, but nobody stood with me when I was going through that drama. They saw it. They were just hoping that I wouldn't. They were just hoping that I wouldn't get back her. No, they were just hoping that I wouldn't. Oh, shit. So, yeah, I'm sorry, someone was at the door. They were just hoping that I would not at the school continue to talk. You know, I was just, you know, let's look at the books. Let's see how we're spending this money. And I was using these funds, you know, for what's best for the student. That's what the local school board is for.
Well, Umar's got
so keep in mind, I went before the board after I was arrested. I didn't even mention the fact that I had been arrested. I talked about the money, and she says, well, I'll have someone from my office call you. I got to run around, the run around, the run around. So these teachers were intimidated by her. They thought I was the president of the local school council. The local school council hires and fires principals. Well, I wasn't. So then they backed out from me because they were all, you know, trying to get with me, da-da-da-da, because, you know, but – unfortunately, you know, the LSC president, he they were trying to vote me in, but I was the chairperson of the Parent Advisory Council. Yeah. So as a Parent Advisory Council, they needed a signature to spend the money, too. That's why they arrested me. You know what I'm saying? So the charter schools,
so what
like you said, Brother Kiyanki, they do run a little differently than they run a little differently than the regular public schools. So they get to run it almost like a not-for-profit.
So, in other words, he thinks that that building is going to pull from the neighborhood students. So how are they going
to
pay?
It's supposed to be a boarding school, isn't it?
What school?
It's supposed to be a boarding school, isn't it? Or at least one of the schools.
What school? What
Umar
school?
Johnson School.
Umar Johnson
School. Oh, yeah. So is he coming to Chicago? I caught the... portion of
No. This school's in Delaware.
Okay. So I don't know about a boarding school, but certainly private. We have like Freedom
Home
Academy
in Chicago. That was the school we was talking about. I asked, was the school a private school? Was it a public school at first?
I did
the
watch
school
a portion
in Delaware,
of an interview with him. Yeah.
The school in Delaware. I wanted to know what happened to all the kids.
Oh, that's what you were talking about. I apologize. I thought you were talking about public schools. Well, you know what? People are actually looking at him because they're reaching out to him for homeschooling. So I did watch a portion of his podcast. As far as the children, he was a consultant, from what I understand. You know, he's got high level education, but
he's got education in psychology.
Well, it's still education. Yeah, I mean, I'm being honest with you. His conversation is way better than these people with master's and PhDs. Not all, but a lot of these people, there's too many of us of color, and it looks like nobody can help our children but somebody like me who gets arrested for speaking up like Dr. Umar Johnson. He's speaking the truth. You know, you educate your own. And as far as the children, I don't know. I really have not been following him real tight, but I do check him out when I get a chance, so... I understand his new school is opening up and he needs support. I could have gave him my building in Brownsville where I was trying to get black folks to help me save it. I could have gave him my building right in Brownsville.
Let me ask you this, Reba. Now, Umar Johnson is soliciting because they need some trade work done, HVAC work, electrical work, probably some plumbing work done there too. He's soliciting for volunteer tradesmen to help with that. He's also said if that doesn't work out, he's got to raise about $300,000 for labor. Now,
well,
I'm thinking, hold on, Piarki. He's got to hire teachers too. Now, I'm asking you, Reba, because you're an educator. Would you volunteer at his school to teach?
Well, no, parents will pay for quality education. So it's not, no,
okay.
we wouldn't volunteer. No, well, I didn't do that
okay.
here in Chicago.
Well, see,
and
that's what
there would be
expecting.
No need. And they can get a grant, too, by the way. You can get a grant to go to these charter schools. So I don't know the status, Brother Kiyonki, as far as, like, what type
no,
of school it is.
His ain't
going to
be no charter school.
No, yeah, he's not. Yeah,
well,
right, he's
I'm opening one in Arizona. I'm certainly going to open up my school finally after all these years. My cousin's like, come on down, you know. And I speak the Spanish. And I have more experience than back then when she wanted me to do it. But charter school is certainly, you know, an option. I wasn't really for charter schools at first. And then the people that were getting their children into, like even one of my early board of directors, she was like, oh, I got in. Mm-hmm. I don't know. And I'm like, she act like she was sending them to a private school and she was paying out of pocket. People weren't sharing information freely. That's crazy. Oh, I got me. They were at Longwood. That's when that became
no,
a term.
You hold. You just said the magic word Arizona. Hold it. Somebody from Arizona is calling them. 336, your mic is open. 336.
Yep.
We can hear you.
Okay. Thank you so much. How are you, sir?
Fine.
Greetings, Brother Pianke. I got in late. I'm at a facility family, meaning a nursing home. Anyway, I heard the sister say Arizona. Greetings, sister. Can you give me up
Greetings.
To speed what's going on? On your show today because, and if you hear people in and out, I'm in a nursing facility. I heard you say Arizona. It wouldn't happen to be Phoenix, would it?
I thought they said like Peoria. They are close to Phoenix, Arizona. My cubs, yeah. So, but I can certainly let you know next show, or you can get my number because my cousin, she's a tax professional out there. She's been telling me to get out there for years.
Oh, okay. Yeah. You're kind of muffled, sister.
She's near Phoenix, and then I will let you know.
Okay.
One of my cousins
that
moved to a town up there. Mm-hmm.
That's interesting because then you have the surrounding towns of Mesa, and then on the opposite end is Peoria and Glendale, and what have you. But how does your vibration feel about relocating here?
How does who feel?
How does
your
vibration
feel?
Well,
how do you feel about moving to
certainly,
Arizona?
Certainly, certainly, yeah. That yeah, it's time. You know, you do have to move when the spirit is right. So it's the best atmosphere, the best environment for me to go ahead and relocate and establish the school. And I actually like to do several. My children went to the first virtual hybrid charter school, Chicago Virtual Charter School. Really, really interesting quality education.
Define what a hybrid charter school is.
Brand new, you know, they're trying it out, just like the Tesla was hybrid, so now it's on the market. So hybrid meaning, you know, just, you know, see how it goes.
Instruction is virtual and part of it's face-to-face?
Well, no, that wasn't what the hybrid part was. The hybrid was like,
okay,
this is a model, like a model school, right? And then certain other charter schools came up, so there are more charter schools now, but that one was one of the very first, certainly in Illinois, hybrid charter schools, but there were other charter schools available. But, yeah, virtual, and we, because of the state board law, children have to have contact hours. So my children visited the school as well as the other children. They had to have a minimum of 2.25 hours, so 2 hours and 15 minutes. They met with a certified pre-K, K-12 teacher.
Mm-hmm.
And so other than that, the parents at home, they sent us a computer and books to work with our children. So really the parents were the teachers, but we weren't a qualified board licensed teachers. So we actually, our children had to connect with the licensed state board teachers in the classroom. So there's that legal contact hours that they had to have.
Sister, may I ask you a question? What is your curriculum? What do you want to teach? And I think that's a wise idea, you moving to Arizona, because there's something major getting ready to happen here. And this is deep. What's your time frame for relocating out here? And what's your career?
July, August, because keep in mind, I want to get in on a new school year. So I teach Spanish myself. So as far as curricula, I'm going to make sure that the economics is taught in the school, financial literacy, economics, home ec as well. So farming, gardening, things that will sustain the children beyond high school, whether they are going to be going into career fields or whether they are going to be self-employed. So pretty much, besides teaching skills like Spanish, you know, that they can put on their resume, they're going to learn how to budget. They're going to learn basic things like cooking and how to properly clean, you know, how to maintain a home. You know, just basically things. It goes back to where it's like even my mom and my aunt, they took, my mom was a seamstress, so that was something that she could do with, she learned that skill in high school. So she sold for my aunt who was a model. She made outfits for my aunt. So, and then.
Okay.
This
is very, very interesting because I'm going to tell you where I am. I'm in Buffalo Soldier Country. I've had two factories in my lifetime sewing, and
lady that brother Kay, I heard about you.
I still got a few pieces of equipment left. I tell you what, they may be coming in and out, the nurses. So, Brother L.A., would you pass the number on to this sister? Now, you're still in Chicago, right?
I am, and all of my children are adults, so I can travel. And I sing with a live band, so we're going to travel.
Okay. I'm so grateful that you are going to incorporate Spanish, and I'll tell you why later. Brother L.A., let this sister have this number, and sister, if you can reach out to me this evening before you shut it down, I'd appreciate it. And if you can't get me, leave me a message, and I will call you back.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, thank us. I'm going to mute Brother L.A. and just listen, okay?
Okay, no problem. Well, Bianchi, you wanted to put in something edgewise?
I was concerned about the school that he's building. The question I was asking about the school he's building. He's putting together in where you said it was.
Delaware.
I wanted to know what happened to the kids that was in the previous institution.
I have no idea.
So if that location didn't draw students in the community, where is he going to get his? Another
good
point,
question.
You say he needs volunteer contractors. A person that does those particular trades, they're not allowed to do it at a commercial level unless they're licensed by states. And I don't know what the rules and regulations there in Delaware.
I'm pretty sure it's licensed in Delaware. You know, they probably need to be licensed as well.
Yeah, so saying you need...
Educational institution, so he's going to want to get licensed. He was on the Breakfast Club, and he did mention that he was looking for licensed tradesmen that could come out. I didn't get to listen to the full podcast. I work at a boys' school home now, so I certainly, was trying to listen, and I heard a bit of it about that new school.
Trade people that work in the trade are usually not allowed to do commercial work. So you talking about?
I did hear that from a tradesman too. I did hear that, but it depends on how much. Because I have a friend who is he's done work with CPS. So
well, that's Illinois.
Oh, okay, you talking about in Delaware? Okay, yeah. Well, he's looking, so he put the word out. So somebody figured something out because the word is out, and you guys are discussing it as well.
I don't know if Umar Johnson has a team because every time I've heard him talk about this school, it's just been him. But particularly with the vision that he has, and he's got these two buildings that he, you know, he's taking people's donations. I think you probably you need a team when you're organizing something on the level that he's talking about. I mean, his lane is psychology or children's psychology. That's his lane. But his lane is not the building trades.
Well, people ain't going to be doing things for nothing.
No.
Mm-hmm. It was a school in Detroit, charter school in Saroma. And you had teachers on welfare being paid under the desk. So that didn't last too long. People aren't going to do anything for nothing, no matter what, how much you care about it. They're just not going to do it. It don't make any sense. They got to live. They got expenses to pay for. And then the point, too, you come up with these schemes. Where's the business plan to show whether or not it's feasible?
And you know, that's a very good point, Pianchi. I think that's something that Umar Johnson, because he uses social media a lot, he could have put that out 2-3 years ago. I forgot how long he's been trying to do this. But he could have easily done, put a business plan out there, and then who's your team to help you bring it into fruition?
Well, absolutely. You know, and you're going out to a particular ethnic group in this country.
Right.
Blacks put money in churches on the promise of going to heaven and have yet to see a business plan to see if it's going to work.
That's true, but a lot of them, you know, a lot of churches, I mean, they're there every week. So, you know, the building fund, they're typically sitting in some kind of building when they're raising money for that.
Absolutely. It has to have a business plan based on, it has to have a business plan showing how it's going to profit. Those projections is based on the industry norm. Well, what is the norm that you compare with about promising to go to heaven? Ain't nobody sent back no information from heaven telling you how it is.
Yeah, that's true.
Another thing on your last point there that you played Dragnet. I like Dragnet. There should be more
programs
like that.
I use it as an entertainment filler Friday.
But it makes good sense. And you notice how the people, when they were going to be arrested, they didn't hold court on the street, wasn't fighting, resisting arrest, and so on and so on and so on. That's when America was great with policing. So people want to know when it was great. Well, there's a good example right there.
Well, I think that show, if people want to see it on YouTube free, it's called The Missing Realtor episode of Dragnet. And most of the people that you heard in that thing were black. Scatman Brothers.
That was,
they were black actors in that particular episode.
Absolutely. See the difference in acting then compared to now?
Mm-hmm. Well,
in the way they communicated with one another and so on, that was very good acting. I mean, now not to say that that's void today, but you don't hear about it. It is out there today, but it's not popular for the sales that they're trying, the selling point that they're trying to be gain from those that's putting stuff on, shows and stuff on. But that was very good. I really enjoyed Sergeant Friday and Bill.
Yeah, they I like that Jack Webb's thing on that. Yeah, Reba, it's good to hear from you. I was wondering because you were off the radar for a bit.
Yeah, I've been my second week at the boys group home, so I'm here and another
now,
level
when
of
you,
ministry.
When are you planning on moving?
July, August, I'll be settled by August, I'm going to get some dates set because my cousins are in and out of Chicago all the time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, my cousin's there. My cousin's in-law, they were just up here for a homegoing service.
Uh-huh.
And, so.
Okay, well, I guess I might have to fly out to Arizona to see you again.
I know. We could tell them, there's a lot of them. There's a lot of those little cousins and family, so we could certainly let them know about the
Well, I know there's cheap land out that way. There's some cheap land out that way, but it's up in the northeast corner of the state of Arizona.
Okay.
But then that's a whole nother podcast. On that note, we're going to end it up for today. Everyone have a great weekend.